Welcome, everybody, to Between the Lines, a podcast produced by the Louis Jacobs Foundation and committed to Rabbi Jacobs' belief that the quest for Torah is itself Torah. My name is Simon Eder, and each week I am joined by a special guest who helps us to deconstruct that week's parsha, exploring new paths on the quest for Torah. And as we explore Miketz today, it is wonderful to be joined by Rabbi Amanda Weiss, who is assistant rabbi at Temple Isaiah in Howard County, where she has been since May 2023, so only earlier this year, and having been ordained from HUC. I feel extremely inexperienced today because Rabbi Amanda has herself run a podcast, highly engaging podcast. And if I've got this right, Drinking and Drushing Torah with a Twist, if that's correct. Rabbi Weiss has been involved in experiential Jewish education for over two decades now, from directing high school programs to creating middle school curriculum to 6 years in the Hillel field, and also working on a number of campuses across the US for Hillel, including Cornell University of Oregon and Oregon State University. And we look forward today, Rabbi Weiss, to your passion, innovation, and an excitement as we explore Miketz.
No pressure at all. It's a dream to be here.
I look forward to your experience podcasting for sure. Maybe to begin with the dreams. And of course, in Miketz, we have the cupbearer, the baker, and then, of course, Pharaoh's dreams. What do you make? This is, we're combining three. What do you make of these dreams? And then, of course, Joseph's interpretation of them.
Sure. Simon, as I said before, in kind of tongue in cheek, it is a dream to be on the podcast. I always love being able to join people and share in stories. But I think one of the reasons that we love dreams is that it's a visual story. It's something that even as someone is describing to us, we can see it and we can claim it as our own and make with it what we will, which is always really exciting. I really love the idea of Miketz and its dreamscape because I think it actually talks to both, yes, this portion and things that came before and after it. And if you believe there's no before, after in the Torah and that it's all combined, then that gets to be really exciting. But you asked a very specific question, and I will try to give you the best answer that I can, at least, for your question about our cupbearer, our baker, and Pharaoh. And we'll see. I may throw in a little Joseph in there, too. When we read in Miketz about our cupbearer, he has a pretty okay dream, right? He dreams about the fact that there are three vines on three branches, that they bud, they blossom, and all of a sudden there are grapes. And he puts the grapes in Pharaoh's cup, and it's all good. And he goes, hey, I need an interpretation of this. And Joseph goes, okay, seems pretty straightforward. The branches are 3 days. Everything's going to be good. You're going to serve Pharaoh like you did before. Okay, hold that thought. Our second dream, our baker goes, hey, he got good news. Love that news. My dream is relatively similar. Awesome. And he says, hey, I dreamed that I was making these bread and had three baskets, but then in the basket, in the highest basket, there were birds that were taking all of these bits of bread out of the basket that was supposed to be for Pharaoh. And Joseph goes, okay, here's the interpretation. Not so good. Pharaoh comes to Joseph with two dreams, and Joseph says, here's the interpretation. Now, I've been really careful to not say, what do I make of Joseph's interpretation of them? Because one of the reasons, Simon, that you said you reached out to me was because of a source sheet that I did on Miketz, which is who's actually doing the interpreting? Here in Miketz, Joseph's actually done a little bit of a turnaround. I know that we'll get to that with a different question, but I'll say that here in this particular section of Joseph's trajectory in dream interpretation, he says he's not doing the interpretation. He says God's doing the interpretation. And what he says that God is talking about, how we can read into these stories. And so apparently God's interpretation of the cupbearer's dream is that the cupbearer is going to be just fine, serving Pharaoh as he did before. Everything's good. The baker, not so much. Apparently, potentially burn some bridges, burn some rolls. We're not sure. But in 3 days, the baker not only is not going to get his job back, but is going to face a really gruesome death. Pharaoh's dreams, he says, are actually the same dream in two different forms. But that's familiar to Joseph, because if we go back to Joseph's entry into our story, and we really talk about how Joseph started out in his own dream interpretation, he also had two dreams, which generally meant the same thing. And so I want to say here, the best piece of all of this goes to how and who we're serving, right? So for our cupbearer, his dream says that he's serving Pharaoh. He continues to get to serve Pharaoh. For our baker, his dream talks about the idea of all of these pieces for Pharaoh are going elsewhere. He's not serving Pharaoh anymore. That's not the place. And for Pharaoh's dreams about this idea of first 7 fat cows, 7 healthy grains, 7 skinny cows, 7 sickly grains, all of those are the idea of how do those serve our country, our people, our story. And one of the things that I would say about both the dreams and the interpretation of them are how they drive the narrative, how they drive our stories.
Thank you for going into them in such depth and your own interpretation of Joseph's interpretation, who is perhaps channeling God's interpretation. Maybe actually to focus on what you've already introduced us to, but what do you maybe see as the more significant? The dreams themselves, the interpretation, or the implementation of the dreams?
So I'm going to answer this in my favorite way to answer any sort of either or question, which is just to say yes. Now, that seems silly, maybe like a cop out, but here's the reality. All of them are so important because they make a triangle. What does that mean? Let's get into it. So if you think about the dream, the interpretation of the dream, and the implementation of the dream, we've got 3 different aspects of how we live our life. We have our dream, which can act as thought, something that's in our minds, something that we're picturing, imagining, something that's personal, private. That doesn't become part of the external world until we genuinely start speaking it into existence. Now, we know about the importance of speech because, let's face it, that's how the world was supposed to be created. God spoke and the world came into being. We create worlds and destroy worlds with our words every day. We're always recreating anew. And as soon as we speak our dreams out loud, whether we are sharing them or interpreting them, we're giving them meaning and power that we're putting into the world. And then I would say the implementation of the dream, which I loved, interpretation versus implementation, is that thing that makes us go from thought and speech to deed and action. And it really lets us say, okay, what are we going to do with this information that we now have? How do we use it to connect to what comes next? How does it drive our story? How does it drive us or galvanize us to step up and actually do something? So I'm not falling into the trap. I'm going to say all 3 are equally important. It makes me think a little bit of the what's more important, study versus action. And they said study because it leads to action. But I got to tell you, I think that you need all 3 in order to be successful and also in order to have a vision that gets you to where you want to go.
Thank you so much that you have planted for us, much to dwell on, dream about. How maybe do you see Joseph as evolving through his interpretation of dreams? Obviously, the story or the Joseph story starts, as you pointed out, with his dreams, or pretty much right at the outset. And then here, right in the real kind of depths of despair as he's in jail, they become his route out. How do you see the evolution of Joseph via his dream interpretation?
I love this question and had a lot of fun when I was trying to think of how I would best answer it. And so stick with me, if you will. I'll try to answer quickly, but also I won't lie and say succinctly. That would be really a dream, but hopefully it won't be too long and put you to sleep. So I want to start off by saying what I just said before about thought and speech and action really comes into play before Joseph even has his first dream, right? He is hated by his brothers because right before we get to our dream, we hear the Yisrael Ahav et Yosef mikol banav, that he loves Joseph more than all of the other sons. And we see that, like, they see this, they actually get it, because why do they see it? Because he acted. He gave him a special tunic, right? A ketonet pasim. So here's the deal. They see the seed, they see the action, they see the emotion, and they hate him. So before he even speaks to them, or before he even realizes that there's like an actual issue, and it should have been pretty clear because it literally says they couldn't even say one friendly word, one peaceful word, right? The lo yachlu dabro l'shalom, that they couldn't say one peaceful word. You would think he would get it. You'd be incorrect. Because Joseph, when he starts in Genesis 37, says, hey, I have this dream. They were binding sheaves, and all of a sudden, my sheaf stood upright. I was super tall. I was super proud. I was super strong. And all of your sheaves gathered around, and they bowed low to my sheaf. Honestly, I gotta tell you, Simon, I'm a little sister. I, like, do get what it's like to prod your older sibling. Not that I ever did that, ever. I love you, Adam. But if I were gonna do it, being able to say, hey, I had this dream where I was, like, better than you, might be a way to do it, but would not probably be a way to best understand my brother or build a relationship with my brother. And it doesn't work out so well for Joseph either, because his brothers go, what do you mean? Do you mean that you're going to rule over us? Do you mean that you're going to be Melech? Do you mean that you're going to be the king of all kings? And they hate him even more, which is, by the way, you would think pretty difficult to add to their hatred, but that's exactly what our text says. And instead of noticing it, Joseph just goes, huh, round two. Hey, guys, guess what? I had another dream. And for some reason, I'm going to share it with you. And so he goes, okay, I had another dream. This time, the sun, the moon, and 11 stars were bowing to me. Okay, here's what's really fascinating about this situation. Joseph is immature, thoughtless, rough without thinking of the others. But there's a really important piece here that people might miss. Joseph never interprets his dreams here. He just said he had one. The people who are interpreting the dreams are the people around him. So his brothers interpret the first dream. His father is furious about the second dream. So as rough and tumble as Joseph is in chapter 37 of Genesis, he's not actually interpreting his own dream. He's just sharing it with the people. But we said this before, our thoughts become speech, become action. And so what we don't know and what we aren't sure of is that Joseph wasn't acting a little haughty and a little almighty, and he wasn't a little bit needling his brothers. But again, here we've got a rough sketch of what his dreams look like, no interpretation. And it's just Joseph sharing his dream. When we get to Miket, when we get to this particular section, and I would actually say even before we get there, when we're dealing with the cupbearer and the baker, when Joseph is in prison, he says, look, I don't really do this much. It's fine. So actually, I'm sorry, I'm going to take you, Simon, a little bit before me, because I hope that's okay. But if we go to chapter 40, and if we look, I'm just taking a little bit of a quick vamp moment. If we look at chapter 40 and we look at when he's in prison, so we're looking chapter 40, We see that both of them seem to not be in a great place. And if you look at chapter 40, verse 6, we see Vayavo Elehem Yosef Baboker, Joseph comes upon them in the morning, Vayar Otam Vehinam Zoafim. He sees that they're not doing so great. Now, that's actually the first time we've noticed that Joseph is having any sort of acknowledgement of how people are doing around him, how people are feeling. And more importantly, and this is a big deal, he actually asked them about it. Vayishal is the next verb. He asked them about it. And he says, Madua Panechem Ra'im Hayom. Why are your faces bad today? Why are they not doing so well? I love the English that says, why do you appear downcast today? But really, it's like saying, hey, you don't look so good. Your face doesn't look so good. What's happening? When he's talking to them, they say, we had dreams. We don't have an interpreter. And Joseph doesn't claim to be the interpreter. He says here for the first time, hey, hello, Elohim, Petronim, Safru Nali. Surely God can interpret. Tell me your dreams. Okay. We get told the dreams. It's great. And Joseph doesn't say, this is how I interpret it. Joseph just says, okay, this is the interpretation. Ze Petrono. And he says it a few times. So when we get to Miketz and we're dealing with Pharaoh, and Pharaoh is saying, hey, I heard you have a pretty great reputation. I heard that it's awesome. Everything seems to be okay. And we have Vayikatz Paro Behine Chalom. Pharaoh has these things. And oh my gosh, it was a dream. By the way, this will come in handy for us a little bit later. Pharaoh says, I heard that you have a good reputation. I heard that you could interpret for us. I heard it'll be good. And Joseph immediately says, no, that's not right. It's not me, right? It's only Bilada Elohim, Ya'anet. God is going to be able to answer. God's going to be able to give this reputation. And so I have to tell you that I think through Joseph's story, through coming down low, he goes from sharing his own dream and not noticing what's going around him to noticing and actually creating a rapport and a relationship with others and hearing their dreams and working maybe with God or through God to interpret them. And by the time he gets to Pharaoh, he's really able to publicly go, yeah, God can help you, but I'm here. Sure, God will see to make sure that you're okay. He's not taking responsibility for it. He's not taking power from it. He's not being a trickster about it. He's being pretty straightforward to say, hey, here's the skill and it's coming from God, but I guess I'm the medium. And I think that's a big evolution from what his family thinks he is and from where he is at this point.
So he's really found humility. Is that right?
I think maybe he's found humility. Again, keep in mind, right, he's sharing the story in his original chapter 37, but he's not interpreting his own dreams of saying, like, I'm going to be better than all of you. But I think more importantly than his humility, he's found his responsibility. He's found his personality. He's found his place in the community. And to say, I am one of many, I am not one alone.
And perhaps right at the outset, he wasn't able to cope with his experiences in the way that he's been able to, as you beautifully point out, able to begin relating and translating and acting as a kind of medium.
That might be the case. I appreciate the compliment. I'm not sure that I'm as colorful a character as Joseph may be, but I appreciate that I am in this role a little bit as interpreter and medium. But keep in mind, I'm just sharing my story and my interpretation. And one of the questions I always ask is, who's interpreting and how does that affect or impact the way that we accept that interpretation?
For sure. This has all been dreamlike. And I wonder, looking elsewhere in the Bible, how you see echoes of this important or these important dreams, how they perhaps echo elsewhere.
So I really dug deep for this one and I went through and I thought about it. And hopefully, Simon and listeners, and you will be with me in between the lines through many different pages. But the exciting thing is that we're able to keep a lot of pages or a lot of tabs open or a lot of thoughts together. So stick with me for a little bit in this ride, and hopefully we'll come to a fun conclusion at the end. So Joseph comes by his dreaming realistically and relationally, right? So in Genesis 15, we have Abraham who gets wisdom through a vision, who gets a relationship, and who ends with a covenant with God. Amazing. Joseph's father also had a dream that we've read about recently-ish in terms of the book of Genesis in Vayetse, when we have in Genesis 28, Jacob going to a ladder and dreaming about, Jacob going to Bethel and dreaming that he sees a ladder with these angels going up and going down it. And at the end, by the way, again, we end up with Jacob having this covenant, this relationship. God says, I'll be with you. I'll be with you to the end, which just so you know, it does come up in Miketz, which is so beautiful. It does come up later that God says, I'm going to go with you. Don't worry about it. It's going to be great. And that's an incredible thing. I want to move out of Genesis. I want to move to our prophets. There are a lot of people who compare Joseph to Daniel because in Daniel chapters 7 through 12, Daniel talks about his own dreams, just like Joseph does in Genesis 37. He also, by the way, genuinely translates dreams or interprets dreams for Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 2. And that kind of echoes that Joseph, Pharaoh, human covenantal relationship with our community and our leaders and our people. Isaiah 6 has a really beautiful message. We know it probably best from our liturgy when we say Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. But the idea of seeing the angels and seeing the potential of God, and the statement that Isaiah makes of Hineni, Shlacheni, I'm here, send me. This idea of seeing a vision and being brought to action is beautiful. That is something that we see with Joseph throughout of I'm here, I see you, send me, I'm happy to work with you, I'm happy to be with you, I'm happy to support you. Just try to remember me if you can. Ezekiel, full of visions, especially if you look at chapter 37. Ironic if you think about the fact that Joseph's dreams starts for himself in chapter 37 of Genesis. But here is the fun piece that I love. If we're going to talk about echoes of these dreams, that I just wanted to share with you because I love wordplay in the Bible. I love wordplay in the Torah. And so I wanted to say before when I was talking about Pharaoh and his dreams, I mentioned and I referred to Genesis 41, verse 7. And in Genesis 41, verse 7, after the second dream that he has, we see Vayikatz Paro, the Hine Chalom, that after this, he wakes up, Pharaoh wakes up, and oh my gosh, look, it was a dream. And at that point, he's spurred to action. One of the most beautiful things about how the Haftarah is connected to Torah portions is that usually there's a leitmotif, a theme, a wordplay, something that they get really excited about. So I have to tell you, our Haftarah for Miketz is 1 Kings 3:15, starting with Solomon. And in this, we have Solomon beforehand having visions of God and a talk and what Solomon is asking for. And all of a sudden we have in 1 Kings 3:15, Vayikas Shlomo, Vehine Chalom. And Solomon woke up and hey, look, it was a dream, that there was some wisdom in this dream. And the next thing that he does is he's spurred to action because the case that comes before him is a case of, unfortunately, a difficult baby situation. And whether or not we cut that in half is a different topic for a different day. But these two things, these two lines in completely different stories and completely different books echo each other. What happens when we wake up from these visions and all of a sudden we go, oh my goodness, it was just a dream. Wait a minute. We don't say in the Hebrew, it was just a dream. We don't say, Vehine rach halom. We say, Vehine halom. And look, behold, it's a dream. But for us, we recognize that our dreams teach us something. And so the question is, how do they echo? How do they go? Every single place in our Bible that I've mentioned that has these dreams, these visions, either push us towards a covenantal relationship with God, or they push us into a more covenantal relationship with each other. And that's really powerful and a really beautiful thing if you think about the power of dreams.
Thank you so much for that roller coaster ride. And I love the way we ended with the final dream right on our very doorstep in the Haftarah with Solomon. Maybe finally, as we have gone on such a wonderful tour, what do you see as the importance of dreams in the Joseph story itself? There's obviously three that we've explored in depth and, of course, referred to Joseph's right at the beginning. What do you see as what a kind of uniting importance behind all of those dreams in the story?
So, Simon, I'm thrilled that you are ending with this question. It used to be when I hosted that we would say, if you had one message that you wanted your listeners to know by the end of this, what would that message be? And for me, it was with this question. So I really appreciate that you are asking it now. I want to say to you that for me, the importance of dreams in the Joseph story, but also I think generally, is that dreams drive the narrative forward. Dreams drive our narrative forward, whether we are sleeping them off or ignoring them or waking them or trying to live them. Dreams drive the narrative forward. Now, especially in the Joseph story, I was thinking about all the different ways they do this. Let's see if we can do a little bit of play. Dreams drive the narrative forward through conflict. Dreams drive the narrative forward through cliffhangers, through transitions. Dreams drive the narrative forward through relational foundations, how people are actually behaving with and toward each other. Dreams drive the narrative toward power and pride, like we saw, but also poverty and prison, and also areas of position. That's my alliteration for those who know me and know that I love alliteration. And most importantly, as I tried to say in the last question, dreams drive our narrative and this narrative, most importantly, towards covenant, towards the ability to really build up a community. Now, Joseph's in a weird place because his covenant, in some ways, is not with the Israelite people anymore, at least not in the beginning of Miketz. He gets put into a position of power where his real job is to take care of the Egyptian community and to build a covenant with the Egyptian community. Now, that inevitably goes pretty well for us until it doesn't when we get to Exodus. But the idea of dreams driving us and dreams galvanizing us towards covenantal relationships with God, covenantal relationships with our communities, covenantal relationships with each other, is a beautiful thing, because what I said to you in the beginning was one of the reasons we love dreaming so much is it helps us tell a story. And when we're able to relate to each other in that story, I truly believe that's where that covenant begins, when we're able to see each other and support each other's visions and support each other's dreams and to hold them safe, knowing that wherever we go, we are going somewhere next, because dreams drive us forward. They drive our narrative forward. And if we're lucky, we get to keep them with us as we go.
Wow. What an ending or beginning. Rabbi Weiss, thank you so much for exploring with us today and sharing your interpretations and translation of interpretations and planting for us so much that we can also implement. So really a huge thank you.
Thank you for having me. It was such a pleasure and a joy to be able to dig some deep. My language may always mess up because I talk faster than I think sometimes, but I will say it was a joy to get to dig deep into the Joseph story with you all the way from chapter 37 through 40 and 41. And I have to tell you, every time you come to it, it's a different story. So I hope that, Simon, you and all of our listeners today will just remember that maybe between the lines is also about what happens in that liminal space when we're dreaming.
Sounds good. And that's a wonderful blessing for us as we continue our quest on Between the Lines. And thank you for stepping on to the other side, as it were, from drinking and drushing to this side of Between the Lines. Thank you everyone for listening today. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please do remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about all of our work, do check out louisjacobs.org and also jewishquest.org, and do tune in again as we continue our quest through Bereshit next week.